Come to the king. Praja, the citizens. Translation. Thus being favored by the spiritual master, according to the words of Lord Shiva, Sujumna regains his desired maleness every alternate month, and in this way he ruled the kingdom, although the citizens were not satisfied with this. Purport by His Divine Grace, Shivakanta Swami Shiva Bhagavata. The citizens could understand that the king was transformed into a female every alternate month, and therefore could not discharge his royal duty. Consequently, they were not very satisfied. Om Magadata Namandasya Ganajana Shilakaya Chakshanabhuni Kaminata Swashri. The many changes and paradigm shifts in the life of King Sujumna are continuing in this chapter. His parents desiring a son, but receiving instead a daughter, requested their guru, who fulfilled their desire by transforming him, her, into a boy, who then was transformed again into a female by Lord Shiva's desire to protect and please his wife Parvati, and then to fulfill King Sujumna's desire, he was again awarded the identity of a male every other month. But this was not satisfying to the subjects in his kingdom. And we sometimes experience that having a female ruler can help us in our surrender to Krishna. Because as Lalita Devi told Srimati, what she'd heard that Madha Mangal told Krishna, you know, Krishna, girls don't have the ability to decipher objective reality from subjective feelings. It's not their prominent trait. And this can be a challenge in ruling a kingdom for the subjects. In the past few days, discussions on how to deal with someone, because we find even in our movement devotees with such an identity crisis that, you know, sometimes we have a man who thinks he's a woman or vice versa, or one gender having an operation to change into the other. It doesn't change the mentality. And it can potentially create a lot of disturbance. It tends to keep everyone awake in Srimad Bhagavatam class when you discuss topics like what does it mean to be a male or what does it mean to be a female. Because apparently people spend a lot of time in trying to understand this. Matajis seem to have the ability to discuss it quite freely, whereas men seem to have a code of silence about this topic. As both genders struggle to adjust their role in a world that is undergoing the most unnatural pace in types of changes. And the current notion seems to be prevailing, at least from what I've heard, that male and female are like different species from different planets that are not really very likely to arrive at any kind of compatible relationships. And there's adequate empiric evidence to support this theory. And therefore, if we want to remain hopeful, we have to see through the eyes of Scripture. Because with vision contaminated by material desires, we cannot see the soul, we cannot see Krishna. Bhagavad Gita describes the soul as 1/10,000th the size of a hair in size. But how can you actually measure the soul? What is the soul? It is a particle of eternity, knowledge, and bliss, part and parcel of Krishna. How could you measure? But the real point is, how could you see, even if you had a sufficiently powerful microscope? You can only see the soul and the super soul within the heart of any person through the eyes of Scripture. And this understanding necessitates a worthy response. Since every living entity, whatever their species of life, carries a portion of Krishna, the jiva, the eternal servant of Krishna, as well as the paramatma within their heart, it is an offense to disrespect or mistreat, either actively or passively through neglect, any living entity. So what does it mean to be male and female? They have quite different roles. And these different natures reflect the different aspects of the soul, which are designed by Krishna to interact in a complementary manner. And we see that the joining together of opposites in a spirit of unity sparks new life. And when the whole, Om Purnamada Purnamidam, when the whole is present in the consciousness of any participant in the act of creation, procreation, recreation, within that service, we can decipher our own role in the dynamics of evolution. And conversely, if we succumb to the conditioning which focuses on the superficial dimensions of sex, and thus deny a relationship with another as a whole person, whether that other be offspring or spouse, if we deny that they are a whole person due to focusing on the superficials, we thereby drive a wedge between the male and female components of our own being. And this divides the consciousness and undermines the integrity of the person and compartmentalizes the different aspects of the soul. And thus we find those components which are meant to work together towards synergy, harmony, and integrity, when they become divided, then there's a split, a disconnect between the conscious and subconscious, between the head and the heart, between the soul and the body, between man and woman, between God above and earth below, between Bhumi and Dharma. And when life becomes compartmentalized, it shifts from the synergy for which Krishna designed the creation, in which everyone is encouraging, inspiring, assisting, and uplifting one another. Ultimately, by always conversing about Krishna and enlightening one another about Him, it shifts into a syndrome when we deny our role in Krishna's plan. So, the communion that we so deeply long for requires compassion, feeling with others, which includes the empathy to enter in to the feelings of another. One problem is that we're so terrified of deepening our own pain that we shield ourselves against entering in to the story of another, and thereby sentence ourselves to alienation and isolation. The empowerment to enter in to the anguish of another, to reach to their level, to help them and uplift them, is born of understanding that we are not required to be the compassionate one. We are servants of the compassionate one. Srila Prabhupada was the first person in probably all our lives who really gave us a sense of caring and loving. Because he's the ambassador, the messenger of Krishna's love. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, the Simha Guru, who had a reputation of being so fierce in debate, as was Nimai Pandit in his professor days in Nadia, that any professor or pundit with any contending theory would go way out of their way to avoid meeting them. But a Vaishnava, we know, though hard as the thunderbolt, is also soft as a rose. These are the balanced traits of the male and female components of the soul. So in expressing compassion, Vaishnavas preach. And to make the preaching effective globally and continually over time, starting from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who envisioned Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, began an institution which Srila Prabhupada established as ISKCON. With all the headaches involved in being part of an institution, it is an essential austerity for the scope and duration of preaching. When Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati dispatched some of his disciples to a remote region where no one had ever preached before in recent times, and with great struggle, beginning with no money and no men, but with faith in the words of their Guru Maharaj, they eventually developed a congregation, and the preaching began flourishing. Being very inspired by this news, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati gave instructions to those devotees that at an auspicious upcoming date, they should have a temple constructed and install deities. So the devotees worked very fervently, very enthusiastically to meet that deadline, working day and night so hard. In the course of the marathon, there was an unfortunate event. One brahmachari was found acting inappropriately with a neighbor, Mataji. And some of his senior disciples, his senior godbrothers, chastised him and rebuked him very severely. And it was actually more than he could take. And the next morning he was gone. And they went out and looked for him, but couldn't find him. And they considered, well, Guru Maharaj is coming for the installation, and there's so much work to do that they just threw themselves back into the fervor of the marathon. And had everything ready at the time that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati arrived for the commemoration of the temple and installation of the deities. And he was visibly very pleased by what his disciples had accomplished. And he expressed to them that fact, that you have accomplished so much yet. And there was thousands of congregational members attending, beautiful deities awaiting installation, great dignitaries and VIPs, beautiful flower decorations, massive quantities of prasadam awaiting distribution, beautiful Harinam Sankirtan resounding through the atmosphere, and everyone was extremely blissful. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was looking around and he asked, where is that particular brahmachari? Amidst all this accomplishment, he noticed one missing element that became the focus of his attention. And the leading devotees said that maybe we were a little too harsh on him. And he left. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati became very sad. And he spoke. He said, all your achievements, this beautiful temple, this vast congregation, this potent preaching, these beautiful deities, these buildings, are not as important to me as that one soul who we recruited, who was delivered from the thraldom of Maya, recruited into the service of Krishna, but has now left because we sent him back to Maya. And the devotees were so devastated. Now all their enthusiasm and all their satisfaction, thinking that they had really pleased their Guru Maharaj, was just tainted, seeing the pain he felt at having lost one brahmachari. So the devotees got together, like a crisis meeting, what to do. And then one of the brahmacharis got quite creative in his thinking. He said, I noticed some time ago that one of the devotees had a wristwatch that was having problems. And this brahmachari who disappeared, he fixed it for him. And therefore, I suspect he has a job fixing watches. And this gave him a clue, which gave them great hope and renewed enthusiasm. And the devotees were dispatched to comb the city, to go to every watch repair shop in search for that missing brahmachari, which they did. They weren't successful at first. But gradually, one of the devotees inquired from the owner of a watch repair shop, have you seen someone like this description? And he said, yeah, I think he's in the back room. And the devotee went in the back room and he saw the missing person who burst into tears. And he said, Krishna has answered my prayers. Since leaving the temple, I have suffered so much, more than ever before, and have been continually praying to Krishna that he sends someone to bring me home. And you are the answer to that prayer. And the devotees burst into tears and said, yes, we've come to take you back because your Guru Maharaj has asked for you and he wants to see you. So they brought him back to the temple. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was very pleased and satisfied, and with full vigor and enthusiasm, he installed the deities and established his temple as a very vibrant preaching center. And Srila Prabhupada, we've seen the same mood echoing through his words and displayed in his dealings, that even at times like Guru Puja, when he would be worshipped as the guru of the universe, if he would notice something so insignificant as a boil on a devotee causing him some discomfort, he would focus all his attention on that devotee's needs and care. And furthermore, he told us all that we can display our love for him by how we cooperate together to push on this movement. There's a saying going around that we don't care how much you know until we know how much you care. Because however gifted you may be in reciting the philosophy, if others do not see you as an actual messenger of Krishna's love, they're not going to have too much interest in your words. So what does it mean to cooperate together to push on this movement? Charity begins at home. And in the male-female relationship, even though sannyasis do not have so much experience, they hear. You know, brahmacharis and sannyasis have brahmachari classes where they talk about the horrors of grihastha life, but the real story comes from the grihasthas themselves. So what is the hope of actually having a successful demonstration of grihastha ashram in today's world, where commercialization and pornography exploit this gap between the male and female components of one's very self, caused by the disintegration of society and family units, by the commercialization of sex, which, you know, artificially inflates it to something like a mythical dimension, promising so much but delivering so little, and actually sapping the grihastha ashram of the pleasure which is found in a relationship that persists after the romance wears off and that initial attraction has to transform into a sense of duty conveyed by commitment, which flowers into a relationship of devotion if we adhere to that duty. And what is the duty? Family members? Duty of a husband is to protect the wife. Wife's duty is to serve the husband. Matatis need to feel protected in order to be bountiful. Men need to be respected in order to be inspired to give the protection that the Matadis need. When you live in close proximity with someone, you become very much aware of their faults. And if we focus on that, the relationship disintegrates. Same with an institution. It's easy to work together if you're not trying to actually accomplish anything significant. The merit of a relationship is demonstrated when there's challenges. And in Kali Yuga, there's tremendous challenges in working together because it's the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. It's very difficult. So when Srila Prabhupada says that you'll demonstrate your love for me by how you cooperate, this requires tapasya. Tapasya and discipline are practically synonymous. And in Grihastha Ashram, it's very beautiful how Shukadeva Goswami, crest jewel of all renunciates, so exalted that, you know, when those Matadis were bathing and he walked by, they did not feel the least need to cover themselves. And when Vyasadeva came by and they felt so embarrassed, and he asked, "Why, his son walked by and he didn't feel anything, but, you know, myself, you know, old enough to be your father or grandfather, you're all embarrassed." And they explained that he's on a level, he doesn't see the bodily difference between male and female. But you are Brihastha, so you must. So he was on that level. And Maharaj Pariksit only had 7 days to hear the essence of all the vast expanse of Vedic wisdom, not only of this planet, but of higher planets, which Shukadeva Goswami had assimilated. In his discourse, reaching the 6th canto, which would mean that Maharaj Pariksit probably had about 3.5 days to live to attain the perfection of life, Srila Shukadeva Goswami gave instructions, and Srila Prabhupada has elaborated upon them about how Grihastha Ashram can be successful. When the man is sincere and the woman is chaste and faithful, and their relationship is congenial, this doesn't mean you're not going to see the faults in the other. It means you're going to appreciate how Vaishnavas are surrendering their lives to become purified, to please Guru and Krishna, to become agents of Krishna's compassion. So, congenial manner, what does this mean? And universally it's accepted that marriage means man and woman become like one body. Not physically, but one in spirit, one in purpose, one in commitment. Meaning, you're sacrificing your selfish individual concerns for the sake of a higher principle, the integrity and the welfare of the family unit. And then there's a wonderful blessing that comes into play when you honor that principle. And that's Srila Prabhupada described, which gives great hope to those who want to have a successful experience of Grihastha Ashram. That dynamic is, this is, you know, the chapter when Diti, having charmed the mind of her husband by her artificial behavior of sweet words and submissive dealings and very careful service, she captivated his mind. And he told her, "I will give you whatever you want." And she said, "I want a son who can kill Indra." Because Indra has become so infatuated with pride thinking himself immortal, that he has induced Vishnu to kill my children. It's amazing. A mother could have so much affection for Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. What does this tell us about the female nature? A lot of things. But one is that, and Srila Prabhupada also said that, you know, the purest demonstration of love in the material world is a mother's affection for her child. The closest thing to selfless service, it's not completely pure, because in the back of her mind she's thinking that he might grow up to be an attorney. And she would surely benefit from that. But it's the closest thing, because she undergoes so many hardships, because seeing the child suffering in any way is more painful than tremendous more suffering that she would go through to serve that child. And this is a demonstration of the feminine dynamic of the Absolute. Compassion, love, mercy, personified in the very form of devotional service at the left side of Shyamasundar. Anyway, Srila Shukadeva Goswami explained to Maharaj Pariksit, why is he explaining Grihastha Ashram to Maharaj Pariksit, who's, you know, just got a few more days to live and become completely detached from anything to do with this material world? Because Shukadeva Goswami is seeing how all things in the Lord's creation are working together to uplift our consciousness to love of Krishna and to the ultimate realization of the love between Radha and Krishna. And in Shukadeva Goswami's narrations, Srila Prabhupada has extracted a very encouraging principle that because husband and wife, if they're committed in the relationship, which is what a vow means, that you're committed, that when the initial romance wears off, a sense of duty carries you through to the fruition of the experience. Being that the sacrifice you make of your selfish concerns for a higher principle, meaning the family integrity, if, in the course of your duty, one family member is not able to perfectly execute their service, but the other, out of care, out of empathy, out of compassion, out of love, does his or her service more attentively, then the weaker party derives the same benefit from the other. It's not something to take advantage of, but it's encouraging that in any team, any family, any one member is likely to be weak at some point when another is strong. As we see in the case of Kaliya. Kaliya had many wives who grew to just be disgusted with him and really just wanted him to die. And he was dying underneath the dancing footsteps of Govinda. But after he vomited all his poison and was vomiting blood and was on the verge of death, the Nagapati saw that Kaliya has become repentant. And then their initial affection for him was restored, and they prayed for his welfare. And Krishna delivered him, even though his offense was worse than all those other demons who Krishna killed in his Braj Leela. But Kaliya had that benefit that his wives were praying for him. Or in the case of, you know, Kashyapa Muni, when his wife was weak, but he was strong. So when she desired She expressed her desire, which he had previously promised to fulfill, the son who will kill Indra. And Kashyapa Muni realized, I've been deceived by the artificial behavior, which women are inclined to demonstrate for the selfish purposes, but the great merit in the fair sex is that they are inclined to follow a man. So you commonly hear men's frustration that the wives do not respect them adequately. And one reason is that the wife wants the man to be the leader, the spiritual leader in the family. Whereas very often it's the Mataji who takes that role, but they really rather the man did it. So anyway, when Diti was weak, but Kashyapa was strong enough to realize and use discretion. He said, I'll fulfill, your desire will be fulfilled if you follow this vow. He gave her the Pumsavana vow, which is the discipline of devotional service, which purified her heart to the degree that when Indra was finally able to enter into her womb and severed the embryo into seven pieces, each of whom became a child in themselves. And they were all crying and pleading to Indra, please don't kill us, we're your brothers. And he said, don't cry, and he cut them into seven pieces again. And then there's 49 who were also still living, still crying and telling Indra, we are your brothers. Why are you trying to kill us? At that time, Indra also became purified and felt compassion, camaraderie, familial affection towards the 49 sons of Diti. And then when she woke up and found that, you know, she wanted one child who would kill Indra, now she had 49 who were dear friends with Indra, and they were all interacting very amiably. And she experienced a kind of satisfaction beyond which she had ever imagined. What does this all have to do with our daily sadhana and preaching? We're all trying to become purified to achieve the ultimate aspiration of Das Das Anudas, or because Gaudiya Vaishnavas generally have a male form in Chaitanya Lila as a preacher and a female form in Braj Lila as Manjari, maidservant of the maidservant of the maidservant of Srimati. Where does this all begin? Right here and now, in this room, with all those who are surrounding us by Krishna's arrangement. If we practice Amanida Amanadena Kirtaniya Sarani Trinadapi Sunichina Tadorapi Sahishnana, offering respects to others without expecting any in return. That appeals to the higher nature of the soul, which will become dominant over the lower nature of our conditioned behavior and activate the spiritual dynamic amongst those we interact with here and now, which will prepare us and train us and discipline us and inspire us and uplift us. And by that camaraderie, when we interact cordially, it's a synergy. It evokes a dynamic greater than the combined ingredients of all the individual participants. Where does that extra component come from? It comes from Krishna. Look at the descriptions of summer in Vrindavan. The summer sun is blazing down And it's just unbearable. But when Krishna and Balaram were present, nobody even noticed that springtime had transformed into summer. Why? Because the clouds were hovering over the heads of Krishna and Balaram like umbrellas, protecting everyone in their association from the scorching heat of the sun. The spray from the waterfalls, carried by the breeze, fragrance from the flowers of the lotuses, was keeping everything cool and soothing and blissful. Even though the summer season had arrived, no one even noticed. Samsaradava Nadalilaka. We're in the middle of a blazing forest fire called the material world, where all these sparks, jiva souls, are competing for the central position. All those sparks conflicting, friction, which by the influence of the winds of temptation blazes forth in destructive fury like the forest fire waiting to devour all the Brijabasis. What do? Call out to Krishna, please save us. And when we make Krishna the center of all our talks and thoughts and activities, he harmonizes all the differences. And then the differences become embellishments. First we have to understand Aham Sarvasya Prabhava Mata Sarvam Pravartate Iti Matva Bhajam Divam Buddha Bhava Samambhata. The Krishna is the root of everything and everyone. It means we all have this one common factor which should unite us. But the beauty of the spiritual world comes more from the variegatedness, when it's harmonized as diversity within the unity. Variety is the mother of pleasure. And Krishna made unlimited souls for ever-expanding pleasure, which can be found when we're harmonious in our dealings because of the one central aspiration to show our love for Srila Prabhupada by how we cooperate to continue his legacy and push on his movement. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments?
Thank you very much, Maharaj. I have a little footnote to the story that you told about the brahmachari and a question. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur recognized or knew that he was missing because previously he had recognized service that he was doing. He was doing really nice service in a previous visit, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur recognized him for his nice service. Mm-hmm. And then when he came back, he noticed that he was missing because previously he stood forth. So that was the footnote. The question is, you mentioned, and I'm not quite, I understand this, you said that the soul has a female and a male component.
And known in Chinese linguistics as yin-yang principle.
I'm not clear on that because my common understanding is the soul is feminine and that Krishna is masculine. So.
Well, we say that, meaning that every jiva is meant to be enjoyed and there's only one enjoyer, who is the supreme male. But because the supreme male, the absolute truth, has male and female aspects, Radha, Krishna, the same male and female attributes include are contained within every soul. Like, what is the masculine? It's like the left brain dominant kind of, or the protective leader role. The feminine is the compassion, the nurturing. We have all these components within us. It's not that only Matajis are nurturing and caring. Men have that within them also. It's not dominant in the male personality, but it is there, subordinate. And it's not that Matajis do not have the leadership and the protecting characteristics, but that's not as dominant as the caring and nurturing nature. So the Radha and Krishna are one in principle in tattva, but they have separated themselves into two forms for the sake of loving relationships. And that twofold aspect of the absolute truth is reflected throughout all the creation. Just to simplify it, the Chinese yin-yang principle. Everything has its male and female characteristics. Okay?
This is, thank you very much, it's a very nice class. This is just a, perhaps in a, my own personal assumption, or just an observation that, as Lakshmi Nisringa Prabhu was saying, that we are, the soul is feminine by nature, and yet we have this dual aspect going on inside. That, as Prabhupada says, by chanting the holy names, one's heart becomes softened. So this softened heart would resemble more of the female aspect, I would think, bringing out the elements of compassion and understanding. So that's why my understanding is that if we continue to chant vigorously and enthusiastically and sincerely, that these deeper levels of compassion will arise in our hearts and we'll become unable to tolerate the miserable condition of the souls in this world. So I just thought I'd toss that in there as a little observation. Maybe you could comment on that.
Devotional service is bhakti yoga. Bhakti Devi is female. So every living entity is part and parcel of Krishna. But we also have bhakti within our hearts. And devotional service, beginning with Shravanam Kirtanam, is the science of awakening that bhakti. So, you know, you look at Vedic culture and it's kind of patriarchal. Look at Gaudiya culture and it's kind of matriarchal. You know, men organize themselves into patriarchal systems. It's normal, it's natural, it's healthy. It's healthy as long as it doesn't become de-matriarchal or denatriated or whatever you call it, meaning eliminating the female. That's Mayavad. So we worship Radha and Krishna. And, seek for integration of the different qualities of the soul, male and female attributes. Everything is meant for harmony. Perfection is in harmonizing those different elements.
Okay. I wanted to make sure I understood it. The jiva is part of Krishna's internal energy and also called marginal energy because he has the propensity to enjoy separately from Krishna. So there's that energetic aspect which is typically feminine, right? The Shakti is usually considered feminine. But then I can't remember the reference, and you probably know or somebody here does, but Prabhupada said that Krishna is the Purusha and the jiva is being part and parcel of Krishna are also little Purushas because we're trying to enjoy separately from Krishna. I don't remember where that's from, but I was hoping maybe you would or somebody else would. So can that be understood as the yin-yang principle also, that in relation to Krishna we're feminine, but because we're separate individuals and we have a tendency to enjoy, we're also Purusha male?
A couple things. Krishna, the absolute truth is Radha Krishna. It's that combined male, female of the absolute. We're part and parcel of Krishna, so we have those same male and female aspects of the soul, aspects of Krishna within our soul, because we're part and parcel of Him. One thing that leads to a lot of confusion, and you know, we could discuss elaborately, but there's not time, but we often mistake what we see as male, or male energy, or male nature, but it's not really the male. It's the dark shadow of the missing male element that's taken as the male, because that's very prominent these days. But that would be a lengthy discussion. We don't have time for now. But we're part and parcel of Krishna. Krishna, the absolute truth is Radha and Krishna. They can't be separated. Energy cannot be separated from energetic in its source or in its components. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
I can fix everyone. Thank you for completing information.